Young Entertainment Professionals.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Young Entertainment Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Libby Ulrich, and today's guest was named one of Billboard's 2020 R&B hip hop power players in a year of activism. She is also the founder of her own management company, Riveter Management, and the manager of three-time platinum award-winning hip hop artist, Trippy Redd. Charlene Bryant is going to be on the show today, and I'm very, very excited for you to hear this conversation because she is so inspirational in the way that she has gone after what she has been called to do in the industry, which is management. I think it's one of the most honest conversations that we've had here on the Yup podcast. And so you're going to learn more about her journey leading to management, what kind of experiences that she had in both the gospel and hip hop genres. You can also catch her on part two of our Coast to Couch virtual series on our Facebook page. Just search Yup Nashville on Facebook, replay part two, and hear her perspective among other young executives in the industry. Now to our episode featuring Charlene Bryant. Charlene Bryant, welcome to the Young Entertainment Professionals podcast. How are you doing?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for having me. This is really a full circle moment, being a member of Yep for years, since like the very beginning, and now just being featured on the podcast. This is dope.
Yeah, for sure. And share a little bit more. What was your experience being involved with Yep before we get more into what you've been up to over the past couple of weeks? What has been the best part of being a part of the Yep community for you?
Honestly, the cool thing about being in Yep, it was like really just a community of people trying to help each other, no pressure. Like there was no obligations. It really was just very laid back, low key, but it was like, hey, these are the things that we're doing in Music City. Here's some events, here's some opportunities in terms of employment. Like it was just a bunch of different things, but it was like no pressure, you know? It was just very informative and educational, and it really was a community of just trying to inform everyone out there in the industry, whether you were a student or a professional or an executive, like it covered the board. So that's what made it like really rewarding.
Yeah. Is there something that you remember learning from being involved in Yep, from someone that you met or a mentor or just something about the industry that you wouldn't have known if you hadn't have been involved with Yep?
Oh my goodness. That's a great question. I met a lot of people from Yep that then we all went into different organizations, like just grew in different organizations like WNBA, Women's Music Business Association, and Solid. So, man, I think a lot of the core people that I met in Yep or being a part of Yep let me know about those different organizations because I really wasn't aware. So that was probably the best experience for me in that organization, because it was a hub. Like I said, it was very informative and educational, and I just connected with a lot of people and we went on and grew.
Love that. And one of those people that I know that you connected with was my friend, our mutual friend, Dana Lalavi, and how you were both involved in WNBA, which is pretty popular here in Nashville, an organization for women in music, music business. Can you talk about how that community impacted your career? And more specifically, your former job during your former job before starting your own management company?
Yeah, man, I attribute so many things to WNBA. It has such a special place in my heart, honestly, because believe it or not, I am an inherently shy person. I know I don't come off that way to the world, but it's hard for me to speak to people. I'm that girl that goes to like a networking event and I beeline it for the person that I know. And then I'm just around them the whole night, like thus negating the whole point of networking, right? So when I went into WNBA, still super duper shy, I felt so welcome and so loved on. It was incredible. Doing that really helped me out of my shell, and being so loved on helped me really learn how to foster a community in this business. And it really was just women that were like, hey, we all work in the industry. We know how difficult it can be as a woman in this industry. We just want to build this community. So really, honest to God, that organization taught me what community really is in this business, especially, and just what community is in general. So from that organization, I was confident enough to go on and be like, okay, maybe I could be on the board. Like, what does it look like to not only just serve in an organization, but be a part of what that looks like? And so I went on the board. I was on the membership and marketing chair board for almost 3 years. And the crazy thing, I was nominated after being a member for a year. And I was like, you guys, they were like, no, you're going to be great. Like, and I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing. I just moved to Nashville. Like, but I got that, did that for 3 years, loved it, loved how I got to build and connect and really do the outreach and community service in Nashville. Like, I'm definitely a giver at heart. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know how to be involved, right? I didn't know how to be involved with a lot of the missions and how to really serve the city of Nashville. So that organization definitely taught me how to do that. And then one day someone was like, you should go for a vice president. And I was like, me? You want me to lead people?
Imposter syndrome, for sure. It happens to all of us. It's like, what? And then get put in that position. It's like, wait, this is what I've been wanting to do, but it took having that community to encourage you to go for it.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. So it definitely becoming VP, actually last year, 2019, was incredible. And the grace that I was given, because I was transitioning in careers. Mm-hmm. I was transitioning cities and states. There were so many major transitions that were happening during that time. And I still was uplifted and empowered. And they built a community around me. And they were like, no, Charlene, we got it. We can do this. We can help. I mean, it's just that organization is just badass. And I definitely attribute a good chunk of my success and just being more open and not being the woman that beelines it for the person at networking events to WNBA.
Right. And I feel like a lot of people feel that way and they just don't say it. That like networking events, you almost have to like forget you're going to a networking event and treat it as a mixer because, you know, it's just you walk in and you're like, okay, I'm supposed to get to know all of these people within like 2 to 3 hours. Like how, like, is that normal? Like, is that organic? Like,
right.
So share like some advice for somebody who maybe isn't naturally somebody that's got a stack of business cards ready to just toss them out to everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, take the pressure off, right? Like, just like you said, if you look at it as a mixer versus a networking event, that takes some of the pressure off. And I think a lot of times people go into networking like, I have to, you know, I've heard rules, like I have to speak to 3 people I don't know, or I have to hand out my business cards and act. And it's like, yo, take the pressure off, right? Like, just go and enjoy yourself. And whatever is going to happen, it's going to happen naturally and organically. So take the pressure off. Go and have a good time and be yourself. And then another joy of networking, a lot of people think, you know, networking is meeting someone that can do something for you. I feel like if you go into a networking event and say, okay, who can I meet and connect somebody else with? Because the other half of networking is connecting those you know with someone that may need help. Not necessarily what can you get out of it, but what can you do for someone else? So I feel like if you go in it with that mindset, like, how can I help somebody here? It'll take the pressure off of you and it naturally will happen. And then you won't be beelining it for the one person, you know, and you'll actually find yourself talking to people and getting to know people genuinely. And don't please, when you network, because this really gets on my nerves, do not let the first question you ask be, what do you do? I hate when people ask me, what do I do off the bat? Like if it comes out, cool. But like, can you ask me, how am I? Where am I from? How long have I lived in Nashville? You know, just basic questions.
And it's kind of a dead end question, to be honest with you. Cause it's like, you could say your title and what you do, but it's just like, okay, well, where do we go from here? And it's more of like, I think people in this industry more often than not want to be appreciated for who they are, because there is a lot of like, to be completely honest, there's the other side of it where there are people loved for just what they do. And they secretly like want to be known as a person, as an asset to their community. So if you think of it, if like, what can I do for other people? I love that you brought that statement up, because I think thinking about other people is so important just in general, everyday life, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Libby, I'm so glad that you said that when you ask people, what do you do? It's a dead question. Mm-hmm. 'Cause what if they do something that sucks? Then what? What are you going to say? Like, oh, okay. That's cool. It's not. You don't think it's cool. It's going to come, it's going to come off inauthentic. Like, no, like, don't lead with what do you do, and try to ask open-ended questions as well.
The phrase, the answer, that's cool, is always like just a stock. Like,
I need to pivot. Yes, that's cool. What's the next question I need to ask?
That's awesome. I want to congratulate you, though, on your recent placement on Billboard's 2020 R&B Hip Hop Power Players in a Year of Activism. That is so badass. Congratulations. What did that moment finding that out, that news out, mean to you? As somebody that's just
tell you a story about how I found out. So I'm at Trippie's house. Mm-hmm. We had like meetings. We were doing press because this was prior to his album Pegasus dropping. And so I'm leaving his house and I'm in the car and I just scan my emails really quickly to make sure there's no fires that I need to put out. And I saw an email that said like embargoed. Hip Hop 2020 Billboard Hip Hop Power Player list. And I was like, what? And it was like, Charlene, congratulations. You've been nominated to be on the list. And so I was like, this isn't real. But like, I know the editor from Billboard, because I met her. Her name is Nicole. She's amazing. I've met her when we've gone up to New York to do interviews. So I'm like, I'm literally driving down his driveway. I throw the car in park and I was like, let me go back in the house and have somebody else read this, because I don't know. I think I'm crazy. So I go back in the house and the first person I see is our audio engineer and one of my best friends, Igor. And I said, hey, can you read this? And so he reads it and he was like, oh my God, you're on a power player. This is incredible. And I was like, is it real? He was like, are you crazy? And I was like, okay, I'm just going to leave. He was like, so no, we're going to go in Tripp's room and we're going to tell him what just happened. And so I was just like, okay, very mild and meek about it, because I'm so humble. Yeah, I was like, okay, we can tell Tripp, it's so cool. And we go to Tripp's room and Igor was like, your manager is a power player.
And he was like, what? And I was like,
yeah, he was just like, your manager is a power player. And so he goes, what? And I was like, yeah, I made the Billboard 2020 Hip Hop and R&B Power Player list. He was like, oh my God. Like, everyone was in the room like, oh my God, that's so dope. He was like, that's dope. That's fire. Yeah, that's dope.
That's
and
lit.
I'm just still standing there like, yeah, that's fire. When he says that's fire, like that's the pinnacle, right? Like, okay. Fire is the happiest or the best approval that you can get from Mr. Red is that's fire. So, or any fire emojis, you guys. So just so you know, if you follow him on Instagram and he comments fire emojis, that means he really liked it. Anywho.
Now we know. I'll be looking for the fire emojis all over the gram.
Yeah. For those listening. I'm probably going to start something now that I said that. But to even feel the love from him and like some of the crew that, you know, we're all chilling around, it was crazy. And so then for the article, like I had known probably 4 weeks out. And so, you know, they were like, don't tell anybody. And, you know, of course I told like friends and family and I was like, don't say anything. Lord knows they probably all did the same thing I did. Don't tell anybody, Charlene, this. And so when it came out, my phone was blowing up, the text messages and the phone calls and the reposts of, you know, the article that I put up on Instagram. It was so, it's still so surreal for me. Because I'm, you know, relatively new. I've been in the music industry for 13 years now, but I'm relatively new to the management space. Mm-hmm. So to be honored from one of the biggest publications in the music industry and my peers recognizing like that you are a power player, it's the most humbling, gratifying, wonderful thing that I can't even... I literally have no words. It's just, it's dope. Dope AF. Like, that's exactly
dope AF.
What
fire emoji, congratulations, party emoji. Yes. Love it. Well, congrats. Yeah. And I'm sure, again, that's, you know, something that's really encouraging from taking a leap to create revenue management. And for those listening, Trippy Red is who we're talking about that you manage. Yes. So share more just about what led you to take that leap of faith to say, I'm going to start my own management company. We're just going to go for it. Don't even know we're going to have our blinders on and just, yeah.
Yeah. Godspeed. It was definitely not an easy decision, right? You know, I remember, and I was just telling someone the story the other day. I remember I was reading, my grandfather passed away October 2017. And before he had passed away, it was on my heart to read the book by Paul Allen, Artist Management. And so I started reading it, but I didn't finish it. And I just remember before my grandfather passed, he was like my dad, he was like so proud of everything that I was doing. So he was so encouraging. And I just remember, I was like, I can curl into a ball or I can just start going after what I want. And so that was the attitude I had. So it was January 2018. I'm working at Sony and Trippy's mom calls me. And it's so weird because I was at the Grammys. I had just finished the artist management book. I was at the Grammys with other artists because I was doing digital account management at Sony at the time. And Trippy's mom called me and was like, hey, my son is blowing up and we need your help. And I was just like, who? And she was like, Trippy Red. I was like, I have never heard of Trippy Red. Not to say, you know, he wasn't blown up, but I was just like, I don't know who that is. And so I did some research and the pictures, I remember the pictures popping up and I was like, oh, I work for Jesus and these pictures are not in line.
Dark.
Yeah, because I was just like, this is some really heavy. I was like, it's some heavy shit. So like several months go by and, you know, she was like, hey, we really need your help. Can you help us? And so I've told the story several times, but people tell me that they enjoy it. When I first met him, I flew to Columbus and we walk in the house and he is sitting on the floor with his legs crossed in his boxers playing video games. And she was like, her nickname for him is Bubby. Bubby, here's Charlene. And he turned and was just like, hey, like waved. And I was like, what child is this? I'm not about to help him. I got a whole job at Sony, a whole career. I'm not about to do this. This is a baby. And he is young, but I think he just turned 19 when that happened. And so I was just like, okay, whatever. Let me just, you know, talk to mom. And
this, yeah.
Yeah, like, let me just go through the motions. And I remember his friends coming in and saying, hey, Trip, we're going to go to Walmart. And because, again, Columbus, Ohio, not a lot of exciting things going on. And so he was like, oh, let me go get dressed. And so he ran upstairs and he just had on all this designer and like jewelry and like levitated down the stairs. I remember I looked at him and I was like, yo, that is a star. I can do this. So I started working with him, just consulting. I started off just, you know, and I told them 30 to 90 days, right? Like, I'm gonna come in. I'm very good at building teams and organizing things. And just, you know, I didn't know I was that good at the operational side of things. So, you know, I was just getting his teams in order and things like that and opening up the communication. And Life's a Trip comes out like a month later. Like, you know, I pushed on the label. I was like, we got to do this. We got to put it out. This is what you promised him. And it debuts number 4 on Billboard. And I was blown away. I was like, yo.
Also, that album name aged very well.
Yes. Isn't it great?
I was like, it is. Still is.
Life is a Trip. Definitely in 2020. It's very, very caught up with the times. Yeah. So that album came out. I just knew there was something special about him and I was intrigued and I was on the fence, right? Because, you know, sometimes in your career, you kind of like feel like you hit the ceiling. Like, what's the next move?
Yeah.
Right. And like, if you look at my resume, I have switched jobs like every 2 years, whether it's a promotion within the company or a different company. And I know my family was just like, that's not normal. And I'm like, this is the music industry. It is a revolving door. That is normal.
That is.
So, yeah. And it's like, I don't know. I guess I just needed something more. Like someone who had told me this, someone said to me that if you're in a career and you don't feel like you're growing, they basically were like, you grow or you go.
Yeah.
And they said, if it's usually within a 2-year time span that you'll feel this. It's like you just feel this yearning that you need to do more. And oddly enough, I'm, you know, managing Trip on the side and working full time at Sony. And I was feeling that like, man, I don't know what's next.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one day Trippy called me and I was in the conference room and I was already like struggling in this meeting. And he was just like, quit your job and move to LA. And I was just initially, I was like, And then next thing you know, I was just like, okay, let's do it. Like, let's do it. And the thing that definitely, like, this is not a lot of people know this, but the thing that helped me make that decision to start my own company, oddly enough, you know how you go back to your friends and family and say, hey, I have to do this. Like my friends who, so I was afraid to tell my grandmothers and like my parents and my aunts and uncles because I thought that they would give me pushback about it. Like, oh, you have a stable job. You work for Sony Music, like stare, da, 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 da. Especially my grandmothers who I respect very highly. And I just knew my friends were going to be like, yeah, girl, go ahead, do it, quit the job, start the company. It was the reverse. My friends were like, what are you doing? Stability is key. Like, why are you going to try to leave your company? And my grandmothers were like, do it. And you said, and they said, I remember them saying to me, both of them said this individually. And they were like, you know why you should do it? Because I don't want you to get to my age and have any regrets. And if it doesn't work out, then, oh, well, you're resilient. You'll bounce back. You'll figure it out. You've never not worked or not had a job or done what your heart has desired. Mm-hmm. So go out there and do it. So I did it. I put in my notice and I left like 2 months later. And then 6 months after that, I moved out here to LA.
God, isn't it? I think some people take this for granted when like their family, like when your family supports what you do. Like, I mean, I'm going to be honest here. Like I am managing my own talk show right now. That's like it's baby stage. We're there first season. Doing a lot of other random jobs, it's not going to look like a, you know, concrete 1, 2, 3, 4 thing. But like when your parents support that or when your grandparents support that, it's like it means volumes to have family support.
It really is the level of encouragement that no one, that you can't get from anyone else.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know, you know, I'm from a small town. I'm from Canton, Ohio. And nobody really knows what I do. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like everybody I know that works in the music industry, nobody knows what they do. Like, everyone is like, you do what? Okay, like, my grandmas are like, they know the awards that I've won and the honors that I've been given. And they're like, that's cool. Here's my list. Go to Walmart and get my groceries. Like, my family is so like, that's why I'm so grounded and so humble. Cause even if I wanted to have a big head and be arrogant, oh no, 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 it's not going to happen. Because I, like I said, it's so weird. Everyone I know in the music industry is like, our family has no idea what we do. Like,
yeah. Or the classic question, the classic question of like, so is the management all you do or is the show all you do? And I'm like, yes.
What else am I supposed to be doing? Yeah, like I've been hit with that too. It was like, yeah, so the management thing, is that like the main thing you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
No, it's just a side project. It's right? Just a side, which is not, so nothing wrong with side projects, but it's like, it's not just a la carte. Like,
right.
What?
Right.
I love that, yeah.
Mamba knows that responsible business and financial management is the key to lasting success. Their team helps new artists gain solid financial footing to launch successful careers and help industry veterans maintain strong financial foundations.
Martin Albee Miller Bryan & Associates is located on Music Row in Nashville, Tennessee, and has been serving the business and financial needs of the music industry since 1981. For more information, call 615-383-1161 or visit them online at martinalbee.com.
Okay, what kind of advice would you have given yourself in hindsight while starting your own management company? Like something you've learned up to this point that you wish you would have known when you started this thing. Riveter Management is what it's called.
Yes. Riveter Management Inc. Wow. Girl, just do it. I waited so long. Like I waited so long to get my incorporation. I literally just did all the like things this year during COVID because I was like, whoa, I have free time. So, but like I knew after I read that book in 2017, December 2017, going home for Christmas, like I knew that that's what I wanted to do. I just did not know how to get started. And then I just feel like it was a massive blessing and it definitely was a God thing for, you know, Trippy's mom to reach out to me. Like that was just so random and unexpected. And that definitely opened the door. And I feel like I'm proud of the way I have navigated management, like starting my own company before, but there definitely was some fear. Like if I'm being honest and transparent, I was scared. Like I've worked all my life and to be, you know, dependent on, okay, my money comes from the commissions that I make with what he does.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, man, working for yourself, like we have this fear that there's stability working for a different company or corporation, right? It's the most unstable thing ever.
Yes. I work for myself. Mentally unstable thing ever. Right. I literally look back and I'm like, I think I'm more stable during COVID than I was. Like,
but think about it. Entrepreneurship. Yeah. Like you are the boss. I know exactly how much money is coming in. I know when it's trouble. I know you don't know that working at a corporation. You just know, hey, come to HR, go ahead and grab your purse and your box. And you're like, wait, what? Like, how is that stable when you're in the biggest moment of the unknown working for someone else, whereas working for yourself? And I look back and I was like, what? Like, what was I afraid of? Because I know exactly what's going on, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but it's just that stability of, you know, being, I guess, covered by a company, but I look back and I'm just like, girl, just do it. That's the advice I would give myself. Girl, just do it.
Yeah. I think some of it too has to do with us thinking that it all depends on us. Of right. Like, if I leave this job, everything is up to me. And it really isn't because I know like previous opportunities that I got in just different areas of my life career wise was not through me. It was through other people. Yep. So it's like, why am I worrying if I take a different route or try something that I'm going to be on the street and living in my car? That's not so dramatic.
That's that fear, right? Yeah. That's how it creeps in and it starts to tell you these lies of these things that will happen. But you're definitely right, Libby. Like, I have such a network. If anything happened, because, you know, people are like, well, what if he doesn't work with, like, what if Trippy doesn't want to work with you anymore? I'm like, okay, he's a creative. That's a risk I have to take.
Yeah.
Like in that, you know, we have a great relationship. He could just not, it's not even about like not wanting to work with me. He can wake up tomorrow and be like, I don't want to do music anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. Like I'm going to be okay. Cause I think I'm pretty good at this. So,
I mean, and like, yeah, according to Billboard also. So,
and, you know, I'm just saying, you know, I think I might be all right, but it really is. I think about if anything were to change or shift, cause even when I quit my job, I remember thinking specifically like, Charlene, what if this goes to shit in like 12 months? And I remember saying to myself, well, at least I have fun while I did it. And I just did it. I just was like, let's go. But that fear definitely But like you said, your community around you, I mean, I know my community would be like, oh, do this, consult. But like, there would just be so many opportunities because there's a lot of opportunities now. So that's not going to change.
Yeah. And how have you adjusted creatively in terms of like what you want and in your career goal wise? And then with Trippy as well, because with COVID this past year, obviously a lot of artists haven't been able to play shows, you know, mm-hmm. So as his manager, how have you both worked together to adapt, to provide opportunities for him that may be a little bit different than you both had expected, but that keeps mm-hmm. him creatively inspired, mentally healthy as possible? Because, you know, I feel like a lot of artists during this time, whether you're in music or not, it's been hard emotionally for a lot of us to see our work change in ways that we didn't expect.
Right. That's a great question. For us, like when I first met with Tripp that first time in Columbus, I asked him what his goals were. And he gave me the milestones of Billboard number one, selling over 500 in the first week, which in this bundle, non-bundle world, is probably going to be one of the hardest feats that I ever pull off. But I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to figure it out. He wants an album to go diamond and he wants to win a Grammy. And I said, outside of that, we did one of the four things. Outside of that, what interests you? And he's a gamer. He loves anime, fashion, film and TV. So when COVID hit, which it definitely hit him really hard as a creative, as much, and probably like other artists as well. I'm sure they're all in the same boat. He feeds off of the energy that he gets from his fans. Mm-hmm. So not being able to interact with them has been a strain. He loves music. So, you know, we've been recording a ton, but he's like, I can tell that that's the one thing that I haven't been able to be like, okay, this is the resolution to that. But we have pivoted. We have started focusing on film and TV. We've started focusing on a fashion line that he wants to release. I didn't know how in the film and TV I was in, because I'm executive producing a couple things now, which is wild. So yeah, we really just, I had to tap into what his other interests are and start focusing on those. And I mean, even in film and TV, in the beginning, you know, nothing was going on in the film and TV space, but thankfully I just was told that film and TV are now considered essential work. So we will be able to move forward with a lot of the shows. Yeah. With a lot of the shows that we, you know, were working on and movies and stuff like that. So that has been the hardest thing is keeping him occupied.
Yeah.
Because as a manager, I didn't realize, like, when he does shows and tours, we have an amazing tour manager. He's like, we are the same person. So I know when Trippy is with him, he's good. So I didn't realize, like, when Tripp did shows and tours, like, I was like, I could hunker down and do a lot of things. We're in the same city together, so it's not a lot of hunkering down. So I've had to learn how to balance that.
Yeah, and keeping it occupied is a huge thing. Like, just to, you know, relieve that nervous energy and tension from, like, sitting still or, like, not being as busy. Like, I know for me, like, I'm not an artist, but, like, there are days that are super busy. And then there are, like, several days in a row that are, like, crickets.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
So I can imagine. But I'm sure the gaming will be super beneficial to him as well.
Oh my gosh, this little zombie game, I don't even know what it's called. It's scary. The games now, like, I hate to date myself, but, you know, I was in the Sega Genesis era, right? Sonic, you ran to the right. That's all you did. You ran to the right. These games now, like, look like there's people on the screen, and it is the scariest thing to me. It is, he's playing the zombie game and he's talking about maps. And I have learned more about gaming in the last 6 months that I have known all my life. Like, it is, wow. It is wild.
This is not just a classic game of Sims. This is like, this is like virtual reality. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. That whole world.
Yeah.
And what it's become. Cause I'm not super familiar with it as much. Yeah. I mean, who is really, unless the people that play the games.
I was going to say, Trippy and apparently millions. And not to mention, these people make millions of dollars off of gaming. I low key feel like I should have stuck with, like, I should have really just poured my skills into the Sega Genesis back in the day. And I could have been like this elite gamer making millions of dollars now.
Someone was, okay. I'm remembering something that someone told me the other day. It's like, you can go on YouTube and they'll tell you like how to beat all these levels of different games. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, first of all, like, why would you want to spoil it too? Like, the people that spend time making those,
like, you're like, damn it.
Here's level 500.
Right.
Secret unlock. I want to hear, because you kind of briefly, you've mentioned it a couple different times briefly, but switching genres.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
From righteous to ratchet.
Yes. Please put that in one of your social media profile bios.
Yes, I'm definitely going to do it. I've been doing it as the hashtag, but I, like, you know, I feel like I'm going to do a memoir one day, mm-hmm. and it's going to be like, Charlene Bryant from righteous to ratchet.
Yes. Yes. Share what that was like. Share what it's been like.
Yes. So the crazy thing is, I did not pick the Christian and gospel genre. It chose me, if I'm being very transparent. I wanted to work in mainstream. My internships, two of my internships were in the Christian and gospel space. One internship at RCA, that was mainstream in New York. My first job out of college was managing a live music venue in Cincinnati called mm-hmm. The Underground. It was a faith-based nonprofit venue geared towards teens. We were open Friday and Saturday night, mostly local bands. But when we had national shows, it would be, you know, Christian and gospel artists like Lecrae and Switchfoot, even though Switchfoot is now mainstream. But, you know, just it would. And I was just like, OK, you know, music's all right. You know, it's fine. Yeah. You know, I really enjoyed, you know, working with the teens. And then the next job after that, my first label job was at Capital Christian Music Group. And I just remember paying attention to how the label was being operated. I worked at the distribution arm at the time. And I just was like, okay, just pay attention to what's going on. And I remember, you know, I started moving up in the ranks and I was offered an operations job and I was just like, why? You know, it didn't make sense to me because operations is not anything sexy and not anything that I like ever thought that I would do. Mm-hmm. But I just remember, okay, Lord, I'm here. Let me learn. And one of the blessings of working in the Christian and gospel genre, it really taught me how to relate to artists. That was probably the easiest, but for me, it was one of the more comfortable genres because I am a believer. And so that was one way, because I told you I'm shy. I don't know how to break the ice. So one of the things I was like, okay, well, we've got Jesus in common. So at least I can lead with that. And this is how I can start relating to these artists. And so, you know, that's how I broke the ice, you know, just talking about their faith. And I remember sitting in the car one day. I will tell you this, working in the Christian and gospel genre was a massive blessing and learning lesson in my career, because not a lot of people know how difficult it was to work in that genre, because not a lot of people were showing love to Christian. Like, you know, I worked in digital account management, working with the DSPs. I'm going to share this story. I remember there was a specific DSP, I won't say names, but they would not place one of our artists' albums on the main page because their band name was Jesus Culture and they didn't want to offend any of their followers or their subscribers.
Yeah.
And they were like, if we put that on the main page, some people of different religions can find that offensive. And I was like, you know what? Okay, we understand that. But those were just the little battles that we had to fight constantly in that genre. And so I remember sitting in the car with Kirk Franklin. We were in New York having meetings. And I just felt like I was working so hard to get these artists, like, their albums positioned and getting placement and getting in playlists. And I just felt like it wasn't, it was just kind of like, okay, sure. You know, I just felt like it wasn't all the work I was putting in. I wasn't getting a return.
Yeah.
So I was sitting in the car with Kirk Franklin and I'm like, how do you do this? Like all the time. And he was like, what do you mean? And I was like, how do you push through? Like, you know, you're doing something, you're creating music for a greater purpose.
Yeah.
But like people aren't, look at the meetings we went to, like people were cool, but we may not get the love that we want on this album because of that. Like, we're trying to break records in this genre and it's like, no one cares. So how do you keep, like, why do you do this? Cause I'm getting fed up. Like, I was just being super transparent with him. And he was like, you know what, Charlene? I feel like the Lord gave me a purpose and I have to do it. Like, there, I have to go forward and open doors for other artists because there's someone else that feels the same way, but I was given this role and this task to do this, to break those barriers for them. And just knowing that is my reward. Even if nothing happens, it's because I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And I was just like, man, okay, let me keep fighting, right? Like, that gave me a definite push and I was able to go on. One of the first projects that, you know, I broke a gospel record in the streaming world, Travis Green's album. I cannot remember the name, of course. The album, maybe it was called You Waited. No, it was Live from Nashville. Yes. It's terrible. I don't remember.
All good.
But,
you know, Travis Green, shout out.
right. People check it out. Travis Green. It was the first gospel project to do 1 million streams in the first week of release. And I was like, yo. And then, so it was like, knowing that I had to fight and work so hard, really built character, gave me the chutzpah to like really just push forward and say, I can do this. And now even looking back, when Kanye West's album, Jesus is King, came out and it was plastered everywhere, I was like, yo. Okay, because I know that there were DSPs that wouldn't because it said Jesus, but his album was everywhere. And I was like, yo, the genre did it. Like, we did it, even though I have nothing to do with our genre anymore. We did it.
Do you feel like the fight is kind of this balancing the scales of there's some people that's like, oh, too Christian. And then it's like, not Christian enough. So it's just, it's where do we find our audience within this spectrum?
Absolutely. Because that was the argument about Kanye West project, right? A lot of believers were like, well, this isn't Christian enough. And I'm like, yo, you guys, this is a win. Like, we need to celebrate because that was a massive win. And so what? It was Kanye West. If it had to be him, like if that was his purpose to do that, then so be it. Mm-hmm. And so coming from the Christian and gospel side, going into mainstream, it was an easier transition because I had to fight in that genre. I mean, and then not to mention the budgets, like we legit would get like $1 and 50 cents has to go to Jesus. And then the other 50 cents I have for marketing and, you know, social media and trying to get them to events, like, I had nothing. So coming over to mainstream, I'm like, it's this much money? Like, and then like, you know, not battling, you know, even in mainstream, there's still accolades and things that we get, like, you know, prime example, Trippie's album was all over Times Square. What? You know what I mean? Like, what? Like, it was Spotify, Amazon, YouTube. Please forgive me, any other DSP that had Trippie up in Times Square and I didn't get to see it and I didn't remember to shout you out. But those are just a few that I was like, this is wild.
Yeah.
This is amazing. And so there's still a lot of things in the mainstream world that I want to accomplish. But to answer the long way around the answer of your question is, coming from Christian and gospel, it definitely gave me tough skin and made me want to fight and go hard. And now with Tripp, like I believe so much in Tripp as an artist and as a human. He's a great, great human. I have that fight in me for him to like, let's go to the next level. Let's break these barriers. Let's do this. So, yeah.
Yeah. I love that answer. I don't, you know, I think that people should hear that, especially those listening that are maybe already in Christian music or want to get into Christian music. What's it like transitioning from one genre to the next and your ability to do that?
Did you know that Music City is now home to an apartment community where you can live, work, and socialize? Connect Nashville is leasing and accepting social and co-working members to join their community. Every Connect resident has complimentary access to co-working spaces and modern amenities nationwide. It's not just a place to reside, it's a giant exclamation point on how you choose to live. Get an exclusive YEP member offer today by texting YEP Special to 615-649-8943. You'll receive 1 month free when you sign a 12-month lease with a 48-hour look and lease promotion. Visit www.connectnashville.com to learn more about their Midtown property.
Talk about what you're seeing in Nashville in terms of how the city is creating space for the hip hop genre.
This is the part of the podcast. I hope I don't get in trouble, but let's talk about it. Shall we? We're friends.
Yes.
I feel like we're friends.
We gotta be transparent.
I know people that work with hip hop artists in Nashville, and I've heard about the struggle, right? I've not seen it because, you know, I was in the Christian gospel side. So I personally did not see it and was not part of it. And I just heard like venues not wanting to book hip hop acts and all these things, right? You hear about it, but it's one of those things. It's like, okay, it's not front of mind until it affects me, right?
Yeah.
And it has affected me and my artist. We have played two venues in Nashville, and I'm gonna be very transparent. I'm not gonna say names, but I remember the first venue we played in Nashville. She was the club manager at the time. She became a member of WNBA. And we were reminiscing on the show that Trippy Red did there. And she was like, he's so kind. He's so sweet. It was such an awesome show. The energy, the crowd was amazing. So when it came time for our second tour, I said, hey, I want to go back to that venue. And my booking agent was like, can't. Like, they don't want you there. And I was like, what happened? And she was like, they said it was a terrible show. It was a horrible experience. And I was like, what? So I sent an email. I was like, hey, guys. Like, I sent it to the person who was at the club manager at the time. And she was like, I'm no longer in managing that space. But she looped me in with the people, sent this email like, hey guys, can we hop on a call? Cause I just want to see, like, I want feedback. If something was wrong or went left, I was there, but I was like, maybe I didn't see anything. Crickets. So I was like, okay, cool. We'll go to this other venue. So we performed at this other venue. It was wild. The show that we had in Nashville this year was the night of the tornado.
Oh my God.
So the tornado went past the venue. It was crazy. It was crazy. Yeah, it was crazy. Like, we had to get in the basement of the venue. It was like, Trippy was looking at me like,
I'm actually tripping right now.
Right. Like, he's just like, what is happening right now? And I was just like, I don't know. So afterwards,
yeah,
I get an email from our booking agent, this list of things. And I was like, yo, I was there. This didn't happen. I was there. Let's hop on a call. And due to COVID, because that show was very close, I think like whatever call time we were supposed to have just fell through. But I share these stories because this is what I've noticed. And I pray that after this year, things change. And I could be wrong, but I'm just sharing my personal experience.
Yeah.
Venues. It's no problem for NF or probably even Jack Harlow. They probably can do, it's not a genre thing is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
It's a color thing.
Yeah.
Because Black artists that do hip hop, because I've heard of people wanting to book shows in Nashville, and the two promoters that we work with, it's two guys, they've been amazing. And they're very transparent. And they said, it's been difficult to book Black hip hop shows in Nashville. Do we know why? I don't know. Yeah. But I honestly think it's a, NF doesn't have, NF has done venues there multiple times. And like I said, I'm sure Jack Harlow, like Post Malone is not going to have an issue there. But there is something, it just seems like it's something with Black hip hop artists in venues in Nashville. And I don't know why. Because again, hip hop is the number one genre in the world. Like, it is passing up pop right now, globally. It's the number one genre in the US for sure. So why is this an issue? And so, like I said, I'm sharing this story not to bash anyone in Nashville, not to bash any venues.
Yeah.
But until we talk about the problem, it can't be addressed. So it really, I'm glad you asked me that question, because honestly, that has been on my heart probably for 7 months since we performed there, because that's like, that's where my career started. Mm-hmm. So I'm like happy to go to Nashville, and I always invite my friends to the show so they can get a glimpse of this management thing that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so to see what I have been hearing about that I feel like I've turned a blind eye to. And like I said, I'm guilty of turning a blind eye. Sometimes we don't address or see things until it happens to us, and it's happened to us. So now I'm like, how can I fix this? How can I change it? So prayerfully, it has just changed prior to when this podcast comes out. And if it hasn't, prayerfully, it will change afterward. Nashville is called Music City because of the Fisk Jubilee Singers. The Fisk Jubilee Singers went to England. The Queen was like, oh, they're from Nashville, Music City. But somehow Music City is now just known as country. And it's gotten much better. Like I said, when I moved back in 2014, up until 2019, it leaps and bounds. Like, it was, it's so dope that there's, you know, different singer-songwriters, there's pop artists. Like, it's cool to hear, you know, Meghan Trainor worked on one of her whole albums there. Yeah. And artist her, like, people go, like, it's an amazing, incredible city.
Yeah.
So that is one of the things that, like I said, that issue with hip hop, it bothers me, because that is the one genre you don't see there at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm hoping, I mean, it continues as the city grows, that, you know, we'll take the opportunity to showcase that variety, because I think it's important, and it shows how much collaboration can be done here on the East Coast, you know, in collaboration with those from LA. Like, there's room for all different types of, like, pop country. Like, I have a ton of friends in pop that I'm just like, come on, like, we gotta get their names out there more. Like,
we
what
gotta
is
change
that?
It up. We gotta, there's so many talented people in Nashville that need to be heard. And I really just feel like, too, we're coming in a time, the streaming world has made, they're really, it's the genre lines are blurred, right? Yeah. Like you said, it's country pop, and there's all these nuances. There's alt R&B, there's, you know, like, Trippie's not really hip hop. Like, it's like emo hip hop, you know what I mean? And it's like, The genres are so blurred at this point that we just need to welcome dope talent, no matter what they look like, no matter what they're singing.
Right.
Because it's just, that's the right thing to do. Like, you know, it still kind of baffles me. I'm kind of like taken aback right now, because I'm like, it is 2020 and we are still talking about this shit. It's 2020.
We're still talking about it. And people, like, you know, like, I've done interviews with all kinds of different artists who are independent, who are in film and TV and pop. And it's like, they have such great stories. Mm-hmm. You know, they have such great stories that, you know, maybe like Lightning 100 is covering, but outside of Lightning 100, like, who else is, who else is talking about this?
Who knows?
Who knows? So we hope someone knows or spreads the word,
because clearly, you know, And you're doing it. So thank you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being an advocate. And thank you for trying to be part of the change, part of the solution. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of times we witness these problems, but then we don't give a solution. You're part of the solution. So kudos to you.
Thank you. I'm trying to showcase more like entertainers like across the board. So like whether they're like on TV or they're an author or they're a comedian, like I want to showcase that because there's not many talk shows doing that.
Yep.
Yeah. So Godspeed. That's all hope. Let's go. Let me see if there's like a closing question here that I like didn't ask. Okay. So obviously all of us, you know, in the entertainment industry, all of us in America in general are wondering what the next couple months are going to look like. You know, 2021, there's been forecasts of certain things, but we don't really know when shows, just everything is up in the air. But despite all of that, I want to hear what is something you're looking forward to in a new year? Even if it's from a personal level. Something with Trippy, something. Yeah.
I honest to God miss live entertainment.
Yeah.
I miss it. I miss the energy of him being on stage. Mm-hmm. I'm not even performing. Like, I just miss that. Like, I just miss people being together. I'm the weird person that when I'm at a show, obviously when I'm at a show, I'm either like side stage, so it's easier for me to do. But when I'm at a concert, I'm not looking at the stage. I'm looking at the people. I'm like, wow, they know all the words. That like, cause that's moving to me. That's powerful.
And you see his fans in real time.
Yeah. Yes. And so and it's not just Trippy fans. Like I did it. I was at a Post Malone right before COVID. The last show, non-Trippy Red concert that I went to was Post Malone. And I literally just was standing in that arena looking around. Of course I was watching Post.
Yes.
But for the most part, I look at, is this song, I'm always in work mode. I know I can't just sit back and enjoy. Except for when my song Wow came on and I was focused.
You were, fixated.
I was wowing. Yeah. But I was really looking at the crowd and them knowing the lyrics and what songs were connecting and when their faces lit up, when he, like his stage moved a certain way, mm-hmm. like that shit is so cool to me. So not being in that anymore, like I miss it. Like you feed off that energy. Again, like it's such a fascinating thing to see how an individual can have that much influence on a person with music. Like that's how powerful music is. So I miss live entertainment. I moved out here to LA. I'm down the street from like the Comedy Store, the Laugh Factory, like all these dope venues. And I have not gone to a comedy show yet. So yeah, I'm ready.
I'm ready
for live entertainment.
Yes. We need more Netflix comedy specials is what we need.
Yes, we do.
We ran out because of COVID.
When I was working in, it was a very riveting job. I won't say the place. But in order to have joy, I used to listen to the Kevin Hart station on Pandora. And I would be the weirdo in my cubicle because you had to have your earbud. And I'm like cracking, like just crying tears. Laughing, and it brought me so much joy just to hear comedy because I just wasn't happy in that job. And this was before I, you know, was involved in the music industry heavy. And so, yeah, I miss laughing.
His TikTok is hilarious.
Ooh, I don't follow him on TikTok. I'm getting ready to.
I saw something the other day. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, it's him another level.
So okay. You need to check it out. Good to know. Good to know. He's been a little radio silent on Instagram, probably because he's on TikTok. So that makes perfect sense.
Probably. Awesome. Yep. Well, hey, this was so much fun. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Hopefully we'll get to see each other in person or catch up more often.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for doing this. This has been super duper fun. So I look forward to meeting you in person
you too.
One day.
Awesome. And people can follow you on Instagram. They can follow Trippy Red on Instagram. Is River Management also on?
Yes. Okay. So my personal socials at the Charlene Bryant, T-H-E-C-H-A-R-L-E-N-E-B-R-Y-A-N-T. I almost forgot how to spell my own name. Trippy Red is at Trippy Red, T-R-I-P-P-I-E-R-E-D-D. Mm-hmm. And Riveter Management at Riveter, R-I-V-E-T-E-R-M-G-M-T. So thank you for letting me plug my socials and do a spelling bee that I was just horrible at, but it's fine.
No, you did great, guys. Go follow right now. This is your chance. Go hit the friendly follow everywhere that she just listed.
Yeah. Thank awesome. You. Thank you so much for doing this. And thanks. Big shout out to Yep. Thank you for making my life easier, the transition easier when I got to Nashville. And again, thank you so much, Libby. This was so much fun.
Thank you for coming on the podcast. And we look forward to sharing. And again, hope to see you soon in person or over Zoom.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Young Entertainment Professionals Podcast. To get connected, visit yepnashville.com and follow Yep Nashville and Yep Los Angeles on social media. I'm your host, Libby Ulrich, and until next time, discover, cultivate, accelerate.